is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator.
Well, on the earth.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to another week here at Normal Show Live. It is Monday, April 16th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm so glad you could join us here. Welcome to the show. We are going to have ourselves a ton of fun because if I can show you camera six here, we got a full studio in-house today. We got Ganja John hanging out here on camera two.
What's up? I'm not usually here on Mondays, but I missed you guys so much.
Oh, John.
I had to come back. No, seriously. I'm being 100% serious.
We are so looking forward to talking to you in hour two because you were part of this Bridgeport Comedy Festival.
Bridgetown.
I keep saying Bridgeport. I don't know why.
Because it's a beer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Bridgetown Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
Lots of big names. We'll talk about it in hour
two.
It's
going to be crazy.
Going to be a pretty big thrill here. Also joining us in the studio over on camera three, Wiz Kaliko is hanging out. Hi, Kaliko.
Hey, here. Hello. Oh, now I'm here.
Get you on the mic there. And on camera five, we've got Brian the Red hanging out.
Hello.
Hey, Brian. Good to see
Once
you there.
Again.
Boost that mic a little bit for you. And also joining us here in the studio is our good friend, the NorCal Kid, hanging out there. Si, she doesn't have a microphone, so you just have to hear her off of everyone else's mics. But how you doing?
Oh, excellent.
Thank you. And also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, we have the lovely senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie.
There. Tell her I said hi. I wish I was there. Too busy of a day, but I wish I was there.
I know we're all so busy. Cannabis Carrie's got a handle on the hemp headlines, all the latest news stories we got to tell you about in the cannabis community. So, Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, today I'm going to tell you about an international drug ring that was busted up. Kind of interesting news there. Also, we're going to talk about 420 is this Friday. Of course, everybody knows that. Everybody's getting ready for some festivities. I'll tell you who's not going to be enjoying some festivities. And also, we're going to talk about the New Jersey medical marijuana program because, Russ, today, big announcement. There's some movement there. I'm going to tell you what that is first up on the hemp headlines today.
All right. Great news coming out of that state. Also, I've got some news from the NFL. The quarterback of the Detroit Lions has weighed in on the marijuana scandal involving a few players there. And we've got to look at some conflicting California appeals courts ruling. They're just making it so difficult for anyone to understand what the law actually is with regard to dispensaries. Then, speaking of California, at the half past, we're going to speak with Bruce Margolin. He's the executive director of Los Angeles Normal. He's running for Congress for the 33rd District of California. We'll talk to him about his campaign. And then at the end of the show, time for a radical rant, the land of the pee from the government slaves. We're going to take a look at nationwide drug testing laws all on this Normal Show Live. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. In my job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network. Inhaling deeply
all the sacred smoke. That's the Dirt Ball from Suburban Noise Records, Cottonmouth Kings. This is Normal Show Live. Keep it right here, yeah.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or a flashy design. Now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to Elliott Beats.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Some positive movement in the New Jersey medical marijuana program. A Montclair Medical Marijuana Distribution Center has now been granted permission to start growing its first cannabis crop. The announcement this morning from the New Jersey Department of Health and Senior Services also published their list of over 100 doctors that have signed up for the program to recommend marijuana as a medical treatment if the patient has a qualifying condition. Up until now, we'd only heard that such a list existed, but now it's published on the state website with names and addresses and phone numbers of all the doctors that signed up for the program available to anyone visiting that website. The Greenleaf Compassion Center is one of the six state alternative treatment centers that were picked to be a state-licensed dispensary. They are the first to receive permission to start growing their medicine. They do not have a final permit to actually sell the marijuana yet, but they and the health department anticipate that they will get that in place long before the 3 to 4 months it will take to produce the product. This new movement in the medical marijuana program comes after a series of recent complaints, including a heated letter sent from Greenleaf CEO John Stevens to Governor Christie in late March, alleging state officials had tried to sabotage the program, and then one of our recent guests had filed a lawsuit against the state for denying him access to a safer alternative medicine. New Jersey's Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act that was signed by Governor John Corzon on his last day in office became state law more than 2 years ago. If they want to, Greenleaf Compassion Center can put their first seeds or clones in the soil today. Now, no word on where they can legally obtain either of those.
Yeah, I suppose if the weed fairy drops by with some seeds or clones, they'll be good to go, right? Once again, fits and starts at the New Jersey Medical Marijuana Program. We're just now, 28 months into this, just now allowing them to plant the first seedling. Just now, 28 months. Of course, it's going to be a while before that's ready for harvest and ready for any patients, if there are going to be any patients, because, of course, they haven't registered any patients yet. They haven't even created their state registry mechanism yet. And like Carrie mentioned, there might not be any place to sell that harvested material, harvested medicine for any of the non-existent patients. But at least we're at the point now where we can start planting a seed.
And just another large crime ring, this time an international crime ring that has led to the arrest of 15 people in several countries. An unsealed indictment that was filed in Los Angeles court this month said that 8 men ran a farmer's market of drugs that allowed suppliers to anonymously sell their goods to others online. The operation allowed buyers in 34 different countries to purchase illicit substances from marijuana to LSD, ecstasy, and ketamine. the years-long investigation called Operation Atom Bomb found that just between 2007 and 2009, that online marketplace processed more than 5,000 orders for drugs to up to 3,000 people valued at over $1 million in transactions. Federal agents say they can trace the criminal enterprise as far back as March of 2006. Now, the marketplace allegedly uses the Tor network, which spreads website and email communications through a volunteer network of servers around the world in order to hide internet address information. It was originally developed by a U.S. Naval Research Laboratory project to protect government communications, but now the free open source network is used to prevent websites from tracking users, getting access to websites blocked by internet providers, and providing to be anonymous for online users and online publishers. Now, the defendant used it to publish an online market that allowed what officials are calling a storefront that had order forms, online forms, a customer service center, and they accepted different forms of payments like cash, Western Union, and PayPal to transfer the money. The alleged ringleader is Dutch citizen Mark Williams. The 42-year-old was arrested at his home in Lelystad, Netherlands this morning. Several others connected to the crime ring were also arrested in their homes in the Netherlands, Scotland, Bogota, Colombia, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Iowa, Michigan, Georgia, New York, New Jersey, and Florida. There were 15 arrests in all. Along with the arrest, stateside DEA agents seized hash, LSD, hallucinogenic mushrooms, ecstasy, and marijuana. The case was filed today in Los Angeles because some of the customers and an undercover agent that bought drugs are from that area. U.S. Attorney Andre Biro Jr. said that the U.S. wants to make the internet a safe and secure marketplace by rooting out those that would illegally pervert and exploit that market. The defendants are all charged with conspiracy to distribute controlled substances and money laundering, distribution of LSD, and being part of a criminal enterprise. Because of the magnitude of their crimes, all 15 defendants are facing a maximum sentence of life in prison.
All right. Whenever it comes to a story about the seedier sides of the internet, we turn to our senior internet red light district correspondent, Ganja John. So you know something about
this. Yeah, the website was called The Silk Road. I don't want to incriminate myself, so hypothetically, I've bought drugs on there before. It's not down. I'm still on it.
It's still there.
So they said how many people got caught, Carrie?
They made 15 arrests this morning.
15 arrests?
Over the last 48 hours.
Okay, so there's about 500 people selling stuff on the Silk Road from all over the world. And every time the websites get shut down, it just pops up somewhere else.
Yeah, so, it just kind of illustrates the futility of trying to clamp down in any way on internet sales in this circumstance. And once again, whenever there is a supply, there's always going to be demand. You say there's like 500 that are selling there. Any ideas on how big the market is? How many people are using it?
There's a lot of money going through there, but they won't ever tell people how much money is going through there.
But nobody ever estimates or anything?
No. That I know of.
Russ, in my news story, they said they estimate about $1 million in transactions, and I thought that was probably a lowball figure when they were talking about the amount of transactions that went through.
Way lower. And they use a system called BitToken, so they don't use actual money. So you have to go out and find a way to buy internet currency that has a world-regulated currency so it can go up and down like the stock market. It's super seedy and really weird, but any way you need to get high, I guess.
Once again, if there is a way for people to find a way to get high and to provide a way to supply the demand, it's going to happen.
We told you about the announcement a few weeks ago by the University of Colorado at Boulder that the annual rite of spring on campus, a public smokeout on the North Quad on April 20th, would be discouraged. The student body leadership, along with faculty and university officials, had a meeting to discuss the ways to stop the annual event from happening. They say that the size of the crowd had gotten out of hand in recent years, and attendance has been estimated to be over 10,000 on years that happen to have nice weather. The event, which is not sponsored by the university, has been perceived to be university sanctioned due to its size and tradition of happening every year. 2 weeks ago, the university sent out a statement saying that the event was being discouraged this year and that anyone seen smoking marijuana in public would be ticketed. They also partnered up with the Colorado State Police, who will lend extra patrols around the campus, as well as threatening students who are ticketed for consuming cannabis in public on that day. They will also be facing sanctions from the Office of Student Council. Now, as well as having their names posted on a publicly accessible crime log. They have used questionable tactics to quell the event before. They'd use students to take pictures of all the people at the events. Then they would post those pictures online and offer other students money to identify the people that are smoking cannabis in the pictures. Now, they often turn the sprinklers on the crowd, who generally take that tactic in stride. The student council is holding a student-only concert this Friday to give students an alternative activity. That free concert will be held at the Coors Event Center and will feature Wyclef Jean. But the university must still be worried that they're not doing enough to stop the event from happening, because on Friday they announced that for the first time, it will close the entire campus to all visitors on 420. It's the most aggressive tactic yet and will most likely end at least this year's event on the North Quad. Via the school's website, CU Boulder Chancellor Philip DeStefano states, quote, "The gathering disrupts teaching and research right in the heart of campus. The size of the crowd has become unmanageable and limits our faculty, staff, and students from getting to class and entering buildings to do their basic work. It needs to end." Now, you can get on campus on Friday, but only with a Buff One ID student card, so only if you are a student, faculty, or staff member. Police are also stepping up their patrols, and anyone found on campus without their university ID will be subject to a trespassing ticket. And just for added measure, the grounds crew on the campus is set to lay down a thick layer of fish-based fertilizer on the quad that day to discourage anyone from hanging out on the lawn this weekend, as well as taping it off that day so no one will be permitted on the lawn at all. It does seem that they have the event on lockdown. One note, though, according to the Occupy Boulder Facebook page, those people are holding a march in response to CU Boulder's efforts this year. They say they plan to meet, march, and even smoke in March, but not on the campus, just up to the campus. They are asking anyone who wants to protest with them to come smoke marijuana at a nearby park located on Broadway and Canyon there in Boulder.
Yeah, you know, we just can't have college students engaging in their constitutionally protected right to assemble and petition their government for a redress of grievances. Why? They might think we actually have civil rights in this country still. We just can't let that happen. You know, I would encourage any of the students there that have a Buff One ID, whatever the hell that is, the students who are allowed to go on campus on April 20th, I would encourage you all to gather there as you normally would, but don't bring any real marijuana. Twist up some joints with some fake stuff, get some of that Tootie Puff, Wizard Smoke, whatever the hell it's called, or just roll stuff that looks like joints but don't actually put anything into it, and have everyone there on the quad with their fake little joints lighting up. Then allow the Boulder police to have to go through the crowd and write tickets to people who aren't smoking weed that you can then later take to the courts or wherever it is that you take them to have those charges dismissed, because in actuality, you didn't have weed on you. Let's make this as big a pain in the ass for them to try to shut down as they think it is for us to just have the event. Oh, and you know what would also probably cut down a whole lot on people gathering together on one day to smoke pot? Is if they could gather together on any day to smoke pot. Thanks for the news there, Carrie. Also wanted to bring up some news from sporting world. Of course, the Detroit Lions have been in the news a lot lately because of a number of their players getting busted in weed-related incidences. The quarterback of the team, Matthew Stafford, was just recently quoted by the Detroit Free Press as saying that the coach said, quote, "He said, we've come so far, we don't want anything to hold us back, and I think everybody knows that. We're a mature team. Some of the guys that were having troubles off the field were younger guys, but they'll figure it out, and we'll be there to help them along." Three different Lions have been cited a total of four times for possession of marijuana since the end of last season. But yet, the Detroit Lions last year went 10-6, went to the playoffs for the first time since 1990, had by far one of their best seasons ever. At the same time, these guys are getting busted after the season smoking pot. It leads me to believe that maybe they'd been smoking pot before they got busted as well. I doubt it was the first time they'd ever tried it. And yet their team was able to succeed and make it to the playoffs, where they were eliminated by the New Orleans Saints, who just recently won a Super Bowl of their own. It just continues to seem ridiculous to me that we want to punish these athletes for smoking pot, and then we're going to cheer for them between the Budweiser and Miller and Coors commercials on television. And one last note, our own Lanny Swerdlow from the show Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense was recently quoted in the Press Enterprise, PE.com, about medical marijuana court rulings that leave both sides uncertain of the law and on the clinic bans. Lanny Swerdlow said, quote, "We've had a potpourri of various court rulings. We've had one fourth district court branch say cities can ban dispensaries. We've had another fourth district court branch saying no, cities can't ban dispensaries. We've had a second district court say you're allowed to transport marijuana, whereas the fourth district court said you can't transport marijuana. It's just a total disaster," end quote. The whipsaw of court rulings leave more than 200 cities that have instituted bans on medical marijuana clinics, as well as the clinic operators and patients who use them, uncertain of where they will land when the law gets settled. It all has to do with the lax language in Prop 215.
Speaking of lax language, let's medicate.
I think I could find a doctor to treat my arrest anxiety syndrome.
Medicate.
Be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, we're going to turn things over to Diamond Dale Rio in just a second with our Roots Monday tune. Before we do, I want to remind you that this weekend we'll be in San Antonio on Friday for the San Antonio Normals Freedom Fest. I'll be streaming live from San Antonio. There won't be a show on Thursday because I'll be flying to San Antonio on Thursday, so we'll just have a replay on Thursday. Then Saturday and Sunday, the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup from Denver, Colorado. Check out MedCanCup.com for details on that. Look forward to seeing you all there. And if you do manage to run into me in San Antonio or in Denver, I will be sporting the brand new handmade apparel All Use Is Nunya t-shirts.
So excited.
Yeah, yes, yes. We will have All Use Is Nunya t-shirts. I think I've got 5XXLs, 5XLs, 5Ls, and 5Ms coming.
Yeah,
so five of each of those sizes, and should be enough for the crew and maybe a few other folks. So we're looking forward to that. Check out handmadeapparel.biz for all of the details on our official NSL gear. All right, well, it's Roots Monday, so that means it's time for jazz, acoustic, folk, country, roots music. So we're going to turn things over here to our own Diamond Dale Rio with this tune for us. This is Freaky Clean. Love that band name. And the song is called City of Love.
Boardwalk, a club where members can, with a doctor's okay, buy medical marijuana.
Sean Curtis, you have nerve.
It was like a slap in their face.
Break. Stop.
We want to go through all the steps and show you how intense it is to own a dispensary.
Are you videotape that?
There were doctors' wards in Venice Beach. It got nasty.
The bigger it got, I guess, the more risky it got.
No, my picture's right here.
Look at you, kid. You're on the taper.
The LA Times front page.
Sean's a visionary, and he's a little ahead of himself, but, you know, so was I.
Cash Bar TV, the ultimate Cheech and Chong joint.
Pretty soon, those doctor's offices were just sprouting up, too, all along the boardwalk.
Boardwalk Empire, the rise and fall of the Medical Kush Beach Club, medicalkushbeachclub.com.
I said, what did you do? He says, Poppy walks out and he goes, hello, suck this and MF and kiss my big black stuff and suck it and stick it down your mouth and suck it.
Normal Show Live Chat is for friends aged 18 and older. And we expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards you can visit.
Say filth, slime, in front of people.
On Sunday mornings when I'm asleep in my dorm room, my parents are busy recording the Libra Lounge. But I always catch the replay here on the Normal Network. Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. following Danny Danko's Free Weed.
Bitches have something to say.
Oh, boy, she's brilliant.
The Libra Lounge.
Hey, man. Try some of this. It's absolutely dynamite.
Oh, yeah?
A Child's Garden of Grass.
Many people have smoked marijuana. Many have seen marijuana, but very few people have ever heard marijuana.
The history of marijuana.
Marijuana was first discovered in Twin Falls, Idaho, in 1907 by a small Polish immigrant by the name of Wayne Krolka. The discovery occurred in early May, while Wayne was working late in his study one evening, trying to find a shorter route to India.
That's one small toad for man. And a giant toad for man.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here. Five of the last seven people to run for president and the last three winners have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks, we've got to call an audible. Bruce Margolin is in a conference right at the moment. We'll try to get him for the end of the show. So we'll move the rant up to this time. And time to talk about drug testing fever. That's right. America is caught up in drug testing fever. That's the answer to all our drug-related problems, you see. Simply require everyone to submit a cup of urine in order to participate in every activity imaginable. Then people who use drugs won't use them anymore. And all our activities will be free from drug users, who we suppose will just go quietly about taking drugs, and they won't be doing anything else during their activity-free days. They won't be bothering us a bit. First stop on our whirlwind tour, Georgia, where the governor, Nathan Deal, just signed a law to drug test parents who seek welfare assistance. The new law requires parents who apply for the Federal Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program to pay for and pass a drug test that would cost at least $17. TANF provides temporary financial help to low-income families with children. Passing the drug test once would be a condition of eligibility to receive benefits. Now, according to Georgia's 2003 TANF fact sheet, the average cash payout on TANF is about $250 a month. And the maximum is about $280 a month, assuming a single mom raising two kids. She can only get this TANF benefit if her gross monthly income is below $784 a month. And there's a lifetime limit of 4 years total to receive these TANF payments. And a component of getting TANF is participation in a work activity where she'd probably be drug tested anyway. Now, I wanted to get some better numbers than 2003, so I looked up a Georgia state plan for fiscal year 2009 document, and I found this. A work-eligible individual is expected to participate in work activities immediately after having been approved for cash assistance. The only exemption to the work requirement is that a single custodial parent may choose to be exempt from these work requirements if there is a child in the home under the age of 12 months. right? So if you just had a baby, and by the way, if you've just had a baby, you can take 3 months off total in that particular year. And over that 4 years that you get the TANF assistance, you can only get this four times, right? So the max over the four-year time that you as a mom are getting benefits, the max number of kids you can really have is four. Beyond that, you don't get any time off for them. You got to go to work. All right, so here's the part that Governor Nathan Deal doesn't want fiscally conservative Georgia voters to know about. The state of Georgia will be reimbursing the TANF recipients who paid for and passed their drug test, which, by the way, actually costs about $30. In other words, it will cost more taxpayer dollars to drug test welfare recipients than the taxpayer dollars saved withholding the TANF money from a single mom that she would use to feed her two kids while she's scraping by on $784 a month. Here's the numbers, and I got this from a conservative website, by the way. On average, about 3,896 adult Georgians received TANF benefits each month in 2011. Benefits generally fall into a range from $200 to $700. If we assume that, like Florida, 2% of TANF beneficiaries tested positive for drugs, nearly 80 Georgians applying for TANF would be denied for at least a month until they could retest positive. In monthly savings, this would probably come out to somewhere between $16,000 and $56,000 a month. However, the cost of testing TANF recipients every month should also be factored into the equation. If all 3,896 potential TANF recipients were drug tested and only 80 tested positive, the net monthly cost to taxpayers of reimbursing those who passed the drug tests would be about $114,480, or double the monthly savings. This does not take into account the cost of state employees to administer the drug tests, the potential cost to the state of rehabilitating drug users who hope to be able to reapply, and the increased bureaucratic costs of expanding the Department of Human Services in this manner. But it's not just Georgia, folks. Our next stop is Iowa, where Republican State Senator Mark Chelgren has a debate pending on a similar measure to require single moms to pee in a cup in order to feed their children. But that wasn't enough for Chelgren, who just introduced a new drug testing for child support measure in the Iowa legislature. Let me read to you for this one. Iowa parents who receive child support benefits on behalf of their kids would be required to submit to drug tests as frequently as every 6 months under a controversial amendment to a budget bill that was laughed at and ultimately withdrawn today in the Senate. The proposal came from Senator Mark Chelgren, a Republican of Ottumwa, who said he was pushing the idea on behalf of an unidentified constituent who believed his ex was using child support money for illegal drugs. Well, what else might the ex have been using child support money for? Dinner and drinks? A new outfit? Movie tickets? By God, we ought to create child support debit cards where the non-custodial parent loads up funds and the custodial parent can then use the card for shopping for the kids. And whenever the card is swiped, a text message is sent to the non-custodial parent who can then approve or deny the purchase with a handy smartphone app. Yes, let's give vindictive exes battling over child support the extra threat of drug testing to hold over the child's custodial parent's head. That'll help the situation. All these drug testing for benefits laws come down to a public concern that the recipient may be spending money on illegal drugs. Yet, I see people using assistance money to buy overpriced sugared breakfast cereal for their kids, a six-pack of beer for themselves, and a couple of lottery tickets. Where's the outrage there? Either we grant people assistance to do with as they see fit, or we purchase them into involuntary servitude to one degree or another. Now, if we wish to dictate that taxpayer dollars for family assistance only be spent on healthcare, education, nutrition, and other things that directly benefit the kids, sure, I'm for that. But why don't we just subsidize that directly with public option healthcare, better funded schools, and public soup kitchens, instead of trying to micromanage and incentivize and punish welfare recipients to spend it on those things? But you know, it's not just the adults who might be misspending taxpayer dollars. It's also those kids attending our taxpayer-funded public schools who might want to be on the football team, the school newspaper, or the honor society, who now must submit a cup of their urine to participate. Got this one from an Arkansas school district. Students who wish to participate in a school activity must consent in writing, along with the parent or guardian, to drug testing. The consent will be binding for the remainder of the school year, unless rescinded by the adult. David Woolley, superintendent of the Alma School District, told board members that the testing was not intended to catch students using drugs, but instead to prevent usage in the first place. Law prevents the school from testing every student without cause, but does allow for testing of those kids that participate in extracurricular activities. Board member Ron Haught asked Woolley during the meeting about the number of students that would be affected by the policy. Woolley answered, quote, "Because of the high number of students we have that participate in activities, practically all students will be affected," end quote. Oh, so now the drug testing is for the students' own good, to prevent them and not to catch them. So, how well does that work? Well, according to this most recent study of the practice, it is not only not working, but may be exacerbating drug problems for some teens. Thanks to a study recently published online in the Journal of Youth and Adolescence, those drug testing supporters may need to develop a new party line. Male students reported no less recent use of alcohol, marijuana, or cigarettes, regardless of whether their schools conducted drug testing, according to the study. In schools where students and adults respect each other and where the rules of the school are clearly enforced, drug testing did appear to deter female students from using drugs. Male students were also slightly less likely to use drugs at schools with positive environments, according to the study. However, there's one very large caveat. At schools with negative climates that also drug test students, girls may be using more drugs than at schools with similar climates that don't drug test. Therefore, drug testing may actually be counterproductive in schools with negative climates, the authors suggest. Now, if you're wondering about the constitutionality of all this, drug testing kids that want to go into, you know, the honor society or the gymnastics team, the Supreme Court has twice ruled in favor of drug testing these students that are involved with extracurricular activities. In 1995, they ruled in a case called Acton versus Vernonia School District 47J. By the way, Vernonia is just a few miles here, from here in Oregon. And the 2002 Board of Education of Independent School District number 92 of Pottawatomie County versus Earls. These two Supreme Court cases have led to such absurdities as we reported a month ago, an 11-year-old girl suing her school district for the right to play viola in the middle school orchestra without supplying a cup of pee, which she'll likely lose based on these Supreme Court precedents I just listed. So, you know what you get when you have these school drug testing policies? You get kids who don't use drugs, who resent you for implying they're a druggie when they try out for extracurriculars. Kids who don't do drugs, but become one of those occasional false positives when they try out for extracurriculars, who then become accused of being liars as well as druggies. Kids who do use marijuana, who find a way to cheat the test and then try out for extracurriculars, who then other kids on the team will learn how to cheat drug tests from. You'll get kids who do use marijuana and get caught by the test and then try out for extracurriculars, which then brands them as a druggie and then gets them singled out by their peers and treated as a loser. You'll get kids who do use marijuana who realize, oh, that's a really bad drug when it comes to drug testing, and they'll switch to alcohol or inhalants or synthetics and other drugs that flush from their system much more quickly. Or you'll get kids who use marijuana or drugs who then don't bother to try out for extracurriculars, which is something we do know helps keep them away from drugs. So how do we get to this place where America has gone from the land of the free and the home of the brave to the land of the pee from the government slave? In large part, because we never heeded the Pastor Niemöller poem and we assumed that drug testing was a great thing when it was proposed for airline pilots and train conductors and long-haul truckers. It's a safety position, we were told. And we can sacrifice some of our essential liberty, in fact, our very bodily integrity, in exchange for a little temporary security. Soon, we got to the point where any position could be drug tested for on the assertion of workplace safety. Now, well-meaning people are defending the intrusion of privacy on the poor because they face that same intrusion of privacy themselves. Let me take you now to New Mexico, where this letter to the editor in a New Mexico paper is the entire
Well, I got a drug test. Why shouldn't you?
Here we go. There are some concerns, or there are some occupations for which strict drug testing should be mandatory. If I'm traveling by air or going under the knife, I want to be absolutely certain that the pilot or surgeon is sober and clear-headed. But if the dishwasher at my favorite restaurant wants to take a different kind of smoke break after work, I can't see how that impacts me or his employer. My misgivings aside, most employers have instituted mandatory drug testings for new employees. That being the case, shouldn't we also have drug testing for those on government assistance? After all, the goal of those programs is to transfer people from welfare to work. And, for better or worse, you can't get hired these days if you can't pass a drug test. Opponents of the bills maintain they're a violation of privacy and treat the poor as if they're criminals. Perhaps. But aren't all job seekers treated the same way? Why should those on public assistance be given protections that those seeking work are not? So this writer, who clearly can see that the dishwasher smoking a doobie after work is harming nobody, just puts aside his misgivings about that and accepts it, and wishes to further the privacy violation by extending it to the poor. Let's not fight to see that none of us are violated. Let's fight to see that we're all violated equally. Yes, America is caught up in drug testing fever. Unfortunately for the American economy, such a fever does come with some nasty symptoms, like underemployment of talented labor and employment shortages for skilled labor. Let me take you to the state of Wisconsin. Annie Short, grant coordinator for Healthiest Manitowoc County 2020, said based on discussions with employers, some are seeing as many as half of their potential employees fail the drug test, preventing them from being hired. The problem is statewide, not confined to local employers. Jim Morgan, president of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce Foundation, said the long-term concern in manufacturing is a shortage of skilled workers. So when potential hires fail drug tests, it's concerning. Morgan said compared to 15 years ago, more companies are doing drug testing. And this, my friends, is why you're seeing the push from business lobbies to expand drug testing for welfare and unemployment. They figure that if the unemployed are drug tested, they'll stop using drugs, and then they'll be able to pass the employment drug testing. The irony is that the people receiving state assistance are among the groups with the lowest rates of drug use. When Florida attempted this drug test for welfare for 4 months, you know, before a judge found it unconstitutional, they had only 32 failed drug tests out of 7,062 tests given. Florida's drug test for welfare supporters claim, aha, you're not figuring in the 1,597 people who refused to take drug tests, so we didn't have to pay their welfare. All right, so how should I feel about the children of 1,597 parents who aren't receiving any extra government assistance when they already live below the poverty line? Sorry, but a statistic that claims less people on welfare doesn't equate to less people in need of assistance. Besides, we still find in the studies that TANF recipients test positive at a rate of 5% compared to 8% for the general population. In Indiana, just 2% of job training applicants tested positive for drugs. I don't feel an ounce of pity for any business that is having trouble filling a position because of their drug testing program. You wanted a drug-free workplace? Fine. You may also end up with an employee-free workplace. Those of us who use drugs, mostly marijuana, will just work elsewhere or for ourselves or continue being dependent on welfare. And if you kick some of us off welfare, we'll just be homeless and begging and uneducated and commit crimes to survive, and you'll just pay much greater social costs because of that than if you'd have just let people alone to smoke a joint.
NARMAL stands for Reforming America's Prohibitionist Marijuana Laws, and that cannot happen without directly engaging our government and elected officials. Local NARMAL chapters and other affiliated activists relentlessly lobby our lawmakers for a change we can believe in and report on their strategies and progress in this segment we call Our Government at Work.
All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to get to this Government at Work segment. We're trying to get a hold of Bruce Margolin, who's our guest. So we're going to take a short break, try to get him on the line. And once we do, we will go to that segment. So stay tuned.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Ph.D.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly. If I said some silly thing, then that's the reason why.
NARMAL stands for Reforming America's Prohibitionist Marijuana Laws, and that cannot happen without directly engaging our government and elected officials. Local NARMAL chapters and other affiliated activists relentlessly lobby our lawmakers for a change we can believe in and report on their strategies and progress in this segment we call Our Government at Work.
All right, welcome back, folks, and thanks for hanging with us during all of the schedule switches up. We've got Bruce Margolin, the Executive Director of Los Angeles NARMAL, waiting patiently on the line. Bruce, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me out. Nice talking to you. How are you doing up there?
I'm doing fantastic. It's glad to have you here because one of the things that I harp on a lot on the show is get involved. And one of the ways you can get involved is to run for office. And boy, you took that to heart and you're going for the biggest, one of the biggest offices in the land. Tell folks about your campaign.
Well, first of all, I have the same feeling you do. I think the only way, I've been saying this for 44 years since I've been in practice the law, okay, that the only way we're going to change the marijuana laws as far as to get into the legislature somehow or try to change the law through initiative, okay? Because so far these politicians don't have the guts enough to do much about it. This particular campaign I'm running is for Congress this time, and I ran for office before the same proposition, and I've done it several times. I started running in 1970, before you were born.
No, 68 for me.
Okay, well, you were 2 years old at that time, and I ran for state
assembly. I remember clearly.
I ran for state assembly in a similar district that I'm running again in, and that was based, again, on my concerns about the marijuana laws. As a young lawyer, and I started practice in 67, I saw the atrocity that marijuana laws were bringing to our community, to all the hippies coming to California, and I saw, even though I was very successful in the courtroom, that we had to go outside the courtroom to change the laws. So I ran in 1970, won the primary, lost against an incumbent that was in for 26 years, a Republican, but I did open up the district that ended up being taken over by the Democrats, including Howard Berman and Waxman and a few other people that have been in office ever since then in different levels of it, including the State Assembly, and now they're in Congress.
So this is the 33rd district we're talking about, and
right.
That's Waxman's, that's the district he's representing.
Part of Waxman's, he's more or less considered somewhat of an incumbent, although it's a new district just recently opened up, and he didn't lap over very much except from Beverly Hills.
Okay.
But he's got the money, he's got the name. However, much to our disappointment, even though he's been down for supposedly legalizing marijuana, he used to come to parties at our offices or here in Los Angeles saying he's want to join NARMAL, he's part of NARMAL, blah, blah, blah. The talk has been cheap. The walk hasn't been there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't walked the walk or talked the talk, okay? So, and I ran again. I ran for assembly again. I ran for the United States of Governor. I ran for governor in California again. And for the recall election, I came in 13 out of 132 people running for that office, which is relatively high. And I ran under the marijuana legalization attorney title, which that in itself, I thought, was very beneficial to our cause to see those words on a ballot, marijuana legalization. So again, the opportunity came for the 33rd District to open up a new seat, no incumbent. And so therefore, I proposed to put my name on the ballot again, and I was able to obtain that same identification as marijuana legalization attorney again to put it in their face that this is something that we have to consider and something that should be voted for, okay, because people are just sick of the problem, you know?
Yeah, now I read something about you doing a kind of an innovative new campaign tour. Tell us about that a bit.
Well, I don't know about a tour. I'll tell you that I do it. My campaign is a lot more than it has to do with marijuana. It has to do with a lot of different issues, which includes bringing Congress home to work instead of living in that pit of Washington, D.C., where they're inundated by these lobbyists.
Is that like a telecommuting kind of thing?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I mean, we've got, you know, let's say bring Congress home to work is a telecommunication solution to our times. I believe it would produce the kind of shift we need by keeping Congress spread out all over the Anchorage, from Anchorage to Key West, each of our own district, most important, each session, we can balance having the influence of our home people on these legislators much easier if they're constantly in Washington, okay? Hmm. It saves the districts on transportation, housing costs of members of Congress, and also, you know, also the cost of creating government networks across the country. This would be much better if we had the congressman basically working out of their home state.
That's a great idea. We're speaking with Bruce Margolin, the executive director of Los Angeles Normal, who's running for Congress in the 33rd District. And, you know, I love that idea because one of the things I've thought about our House of Representatives is it needs to be bigger. We need to have more representatives, you know, less, you know, people per representative. And I think this electronic solution could be something that could help that.
Thank you for that. And by the way, if your guests want to go on to margolinforcongress.com, they'll know more about my campaign, hear about more about my career, okay? But anyway, also, my other part of my, I have four main areas of which I think are important issues. Protect and rebuild our public education system, okay?
Oh, yes.
I have a daughter that went to public school, ended up at Columbia and Harvard Law School. I have another daughter at right now in public school at Berkeley. I have another daughter at University of Boulder, and I have three kids in public school right at the moment, a 6-year-old and 2 17-year-olds, okay? So I know what the changes I've seen since I've been in public school and what's going on today, okay? Our public school system is under attack. Together, we got to stop the school closures, stop the cuts in education, stop the skyrocketing tuitions, and stand up to the education privatization agenda and the special interest groups that are intent on making profit off our education system and not actually benefit the quality of school to the level of education or the professions of teaching. If you send me to Congress, I'm going to demand our society provide the kind of education that we've always been used to in California, for example, and throughout the states. We all need to be funded to schools properly. We're strangling ourselves to death here throughout the United States, and this privatization of our schools is sick, okay? And there's a direct link between the funds available for our suffering school education and the costly, expensive, wasteful failure for the war on drugs. If we're serious about building a future for this nation and our children, we must bring it to an end. We've got to stop the war on drugs. Using education and treatment over incarceration is the smartest way of curing the destructive plague of street drugs and the pushing on our streets. In other words, we've been talking about this for normal. I've been the head of L.A. Normal since 1973, okay? We've been saying education, programs of rehabilitation, and research is the duty of government, not to incarcerate people. And I guess we're all on board on that. I'm mm-hmm. sure your guests understand that as
sure.
well. I don't know if you know right now, but we have 1.3 million people locked up for nonviolent drug charges in the United States. It is sick, okay? We
it
have more
sick.
People in custody than any civilized society. Any country in the world, we have five times as many or something like that. It's sick, okay?
Hey, Bruce, we're coming up against the top of the hour here, so I want to give you a chance to get the website information out to people that want to help you.
Okay, yes. MargolinForCongress.com.
Just the word
Margolin for? Pardon me?
The word for, not the number for?
No, the word for. And okay. I want people to volunteer. All I want to do is spread the word. This district runs from Hollywood to Malibu, from the Valley to what's called Palos Verdes. It's a huge district all along the beach in Los Angeles. It's a beautiful area that really needs to have the proper representation before. So if your guests go on Margolin for Congress, at least, if nothing else, social networks, sending it out to people who might live in the area, and and give us $10 or give us 10 minutes, and that's all it's going to take to push this over the top. This could happen, okay?
All right.
There's plenty of us, and I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to speak to your guests.
Absolutely, Bruce, and we'll have you back on anytime you'd like to come on. And
You're beautiful.
Thank you so much. Margolin
for
Congress. We'll do my thing here. MargolinForCongress.com. I'm pulled in so many directions. What a crazy, hectic show. It's going to get even more crazy and hectic here in hour two. We got a full studio, so stick around for Toker Talk Radio. I got a clip from the Bill Maher show that we're going to talk about, plus new activities from Kansas City Normal and Dallas-Fort Worth Normal, plus your calls at 971-533-7111. Come hang out with me and the NorCal Kid and Brian the Red and Wiz Khalifa and Ganja John and Cannabis Carry. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
We love it.
We love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You're listening to the Normal Network, where the time is 420.